The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to Report from Europe. I'm Marek Hansel, the editor of Institutional Real Estate Europe. And today with me on the podcast, we have Elisabeth Herman Frederiksen. And Elisabeth is the head of sustainability at Urban Partners. And it's great to have Elisabeth on today, as we'll be talking all things sustainability to do with real estate. Yeah, thanks for coming on board today, Elisabeth. Great to have you with us.
My pleasure.
Urban Partners launched last year in May 2023, based on a couple of mergers, if you like. You might need to correct me on this, Elisabeth, but it was the Real Estate and Investor NEREP, NREP, and then there was, I think, a venture capital firm involved as well, 2150, and then Velo Capital, and you all came together to form Urban Partners Group. Is that right?
Yes. Yep, we all came together. We were together, but I think we formalized the relationship and the platform to bring even stronger sort of, basically platform for impact.
Yeah. And you've had a very interesting career as well, Elisabeth, haven't you? You've been management consultants at McKinsey, and you've worked for Lego, haven't you, as well? Is that right? Excellent.
Exactly. Yeah. I started out early. Really before being a consulting, focusing on the environment and systems and how they interplay.
Right.
I'm actually trained as a forester. Mm-hmm. So have a deep sort of curiosity around how it all functions and how it all interplays and how we all live together and how we are dependent on systems and economy and nature. And I think that just influenced my choices throughout.
Yeah, absolutely. No, fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to mention actually that you have apart from the fact that you have a PhD in macroeconomics from the University of Copenhagen, you also have, as you said, you're qualified in forestry with an MSc in forestry from, is that in Denmark as well?
In Denmark.
Okay. And you've, as part of your academic career, you've also, the listeners should know that you've also published some peer-reviewed journals. So Elisabeth, as we've heard, is you're a bit of an expert on the subject, which is great. Yeah, so today we're going to talk about green certifications and real estate. As you know, a lot of people sort of complain that there's no, you know, a universal standard that everybody can use. Is that a problem? Is one certification better than another, or does it not really matter what you use? You just have to aim for some sort of a standard, and that will help improve your green sustainability within the real estate that you hold in portfolios. What's your view there, Elisabeth?
Yeah, so it is really an interesting discussion and a really interesting question. And the way that we view it is that it all comes down to what is the problem that you're trying to solve? What are you trying to achieve? And the way that we see green certifications or holistic certifications is that they all come with a certain purpose and a certain intent and a certain focus. And they are not one fits all, but you as a user need to be aware of your priorities. So if you are more into decarbonization, as an example, there are certain schemes that are better for that. If you're more into the health aspect, to the people aspect, there are certain certifications that are more suited for that. And then there are certain certifications that are more of a mix. And what is typical for the certifications, though, is that they have some sort of levels or grades that you can achieve. So you can be rather basic or you can be more excellent. And of course, in that gradient, the more excellent you become, the more you have to invest or change your status quo. And as the building codes in our markets is always changing, of course, the certification schemes need to change. It's kind of a dynamic there. So I think in sum, we do not see it's a problem that they are different. We actually think it's better. But of course, it puts more requirement on the audience to understand why a certification scheme is used and what is the level of excellence, if that's the terminology we use. Mm-hmm. You can also decide to be very specific. And in Urban Partners, we are zooming a lot in on decarbonization across all our verticals. So both our real estate funds, but also our venture capital leg. And the reason we do that, obviously, is that we think that the built environment has a massive responsibility and also opportunity to change how we do things. So in addition to working with certification schemes, we work with other schemes such as the CRREM pathway, which is a increasingly globalized standard, and science-based targets, which is rolling out for all sectors in the economy pathways towards 2050, aligned with the Paris Agreement. And they supplement each other. So they do not stand alone, but they're excellent supplements. So it comes down to us being all students of what we are trying to achieve and what we're trying to do better, and then finding the right means for that. That said, the different certification schemes also tend to evolve over time, and some do it more rapidly and some are more slow to adapt. And of course, in there, in different markets, you have different tastes, and there tends to be alignment towards certain dominant schemes, so that the participants in the real estate value chain can have some sort of a joint understanding of what we're trying to achieve. And again, that is often a very local picture. So what is really well received in a certain market may be a very different situation in a different market. So, yes, it's very hard to compare one to one, and you need to understand again why have a certain scheme been chosen, and what was the intent, and what is the level of impact or excellence that the user have set out to, and how did they achieve it?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that some of the certifications, can't get the word out today. they adapt, at different at a different pace. So some of them are quite rapid, as you say. Some of them not so much. Is that a problem or an issue for some investors and managers? If the standards change quite quickly, does it have an effect on your planning and on your development, say, for example, some projects you may have, or is it something that people keep a very close eye on, and mm-hmm. and the people who produce these certifications, like CREEAM or BREEAM, they work mm-hmm. closely with people, so there's a good alignment, as you say.
Yeah, and I think again, it depends on who you are and what is your intent and your ambition on the sustainability agenda from Urban Partners and from NREP side in particular. I think it's often the opposite we see as the bigger problem, that schemes don't get updated quickly enough mm-hmm. so that we cannot really use them to demonstrate the level of ambitions we have put into to the buildings, if it's a development, or the standing asset, if it's a standing asset. And that means that sometimes we have to put our own requirements on top of a certificate. And of course, that creates complexity in-house for us to document and disclose. And what we are doing about it is that we are trying to get involved in green building councils and those who are evolving the scheme. But we also are recognizing that the evolution of schemes, again, as we discussed, it varies from market to market. So it's also dependent on the actual group of people in a given location working with the evolution of the scheme. And since we cover several jurisdictions, we tend to have a favorite scheme from a sustainability perspective that we think is more impactful. But it may not be that scheme is available in a given market. And again, we just have to adapt our internal standards and guidelines on top of what is available in the market. But we have a preference for the market to pick up faster. Both as we see here in Europe, taxonomy is coming, and of course it's an obvious agenda for certifications to also align with, so we avoid the situation of having to doing double certifications or in cases where national legislation is starting to move and we see rapid changes in sort of just the building code in a market, we want the standard to still be ahead on the certification side so we can demonstrate that additionality, which is typically why you use the certification scheme. Mm-hmm. And the way that certification schemes are updated is through working groups, and typically the organizations leading this are quite good at involving different stakeholders in the market when they do the updates. So updates usually come after a period of discussion and testing and evolution. So they are typically not a surprise to us, and therefore it doesn't jeopardize our planning. And I think again, that evolution needs to happen, and it needs to happen faster in our book so that we can go from what used to be the standard in real estate to what needs to be the new standard in real estate much faster than we've done in the past.
Mm-hmm. I see. No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Is there a sort of a time frame in terms of how long you've been applying your own internal additional standards to the schemes and certificates you've been using? Or has it been a sort of a gradual thing based on asset by asset kind of thing, project by project?
Yeah, so I think like everyone else, it is a journey. You're always a student of what you can do better to your assets, also depending on what is available to you in the market and how you discover new smart business cases for new technologies. We started when I joined Urban Partners more than 5 years ago to actually systematize across our portfolio to create those standards in-house. And building our standards and then using to the extent we were able the local certifications and sort of doing a translation. What we found was the difficult thing is that often the certifications can be a black box. So you need to achieve a certain level of points to get to a certain level of excellence. And then there can be knockout criteria and other hard things that you must do and fulfill in order to achieve the certification. But we are keen to have even more transparency and put even more clear guidelines to exactly how we want an investment or a building to be built, with what materials, with what indoor climate, and be more specific on the requirements. So we started that half a decade ago, and we've been developing what we internally just call our delivery model. So putting those requirements in already from the investment phase when we start looking at a potential deal. And so we can build it into the entire business case from the outset. And we're still working on it. There is new content coming constantly. We're getting more and more ambitious. So we're tightening our internal targets. And again, they may not match with how the schemes are evolving. So we are keeping a little bit of a double bookkeeping. But clearly, the certification schemes are helping in the sense that it helps align the entire value chain around what we want to achieve. So the materials providers, the architects, the entrepreneurs are having the same basic understanding of what we want to achieve, which we didn't have before when we introduced certification schemes. So that has been a big step change for us in the past, I'm saying half a decade or so.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they sort of set, as you say, like a baseline standard from which you can work from with all your stakeholders and material providers, etc. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Obviously, it's not the whole, as you say, it's not the whole solution to achieving net zero as a target. These certifications, but I mean, how do they fit into the bigger picture? I'm sort of thinking mm-hmm. of things that, you know, like a construction company or someone who's delivering materials. Mm-hmm. Before long, a lot of people are going to have to know, what their sort of emissions are, won't they? Is it scope 3 or I can't remember that off the top of my head. But how are you managing to keep an eye on that? Do you just exclusively work with companies who and other providers who are already on top of their emission targets and they have really good data, or is it not that simple?
Mm-hmm. So again, this is an agenda that is rapidly making it easier to have a clear decarbonization strategy for your investment portfolio. And on the Net zero is a term that has still many interpretations, and the one that we use is the one that's aligned with how Science Based Target is setting that term out. So we are simply just aligning our decarbonization pathway with the Science Based Target decarbonization pathway, and they've just soon to be launching their building sector guidelines. They're actually right now piloting what they sent out last year, and we hope that that will be soon completed. And that will for us be our clear definition of what is a net zero. And the way that we calculate and measure it in our investments in our building is using the life cycle analysis, which is actually typically mandatory in all certifications today. It wasn't just a few years ago, but now it is. But what is not always clear is one thing is to do your accounting, but the next thing is, of course, to achieve a certain level, a low level, and to document how you came about that. And we're purposely investing in a few buildings where we try to take that level of carbon as far down as we can, approaching zero. And to do that, we need to work with the entire value chain, as you say, rightfully, to get information on the materials, so the EPDs, which is the product declaration. And that typically has the information that you need on carbon. And we need to internally monitor and document the emissions on our buildings and, of course, in our own scope one and scope two, which for us is relatively small. It is all in scope three, as you say. And again, this is not something that we've done overnight. We started introducing the life cycle analysis as mandatory 4 years ago, I think it has become now, before most of our peers. Now it is becoming more of a standard, and you can get online tools that helps you produce your assessment and your baseline. But again, it's carbon is almost a metric you want to account, and you want to have a target, and you want to learn how to adjust it down, and therefore how to manage your portfolio, and what are the transition efforts you need to have if you sit on a portfolio that that is either old or which is not typically something that is good for your carbon footprint, or if you have a development portfolio, really rethink how you design, what materials you use, and through those levers significantly bring down your carbon, potentially to the net zero level that Science Based Target is releasing, which is not actually a flat zero, but it's a very low number. And what is currently, to my knowledge, being debated in those guidelines is what kind of emission factors do you use? Does it all have to happen on the building, or can you sort of procure green energy, for instance, and put that into your own accounting? So things are being sorted out, but in my view and from where we stand, it is much clearer and much easier to navigate today, and things are luckily changing rapidly, making it much easier also for our peers and our community to over time actually be better at comparing on single metrics. So what's the emissions on this portfolio? How has it changed? Whereas the certification schemes that we discussed, it's a little bit harder to say if the portfolio is fully certified, what does that actually mean in terms of the impact you're trying to achieve? And again, whether it is climate, whether it is ecosystem, whether it is health, well-being, having that more narrowed in metric, and this is what you want to achieve, helps transparency. And in my book, also helps us all learn and move faster in the right direction.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, that's yeah. I mean, you make some really important points there, Elizabeth. I suppose... I just have one more additional question, if that's okay, and that's around whether Europe is particularly when it comes to things like embedded carbon, whether we're at an advantage to other regions such as maybe Australia, the US in particular, North America, because we're constrained space-wise. It looks as if we're going to be looking to try to refurbish current buildings and adapt them to new uses or simply to upgrade them rather than demolishing and building again. Is that, do you see that as an advantage here in Europe, or does it just make things far more complicated and difficult to do? I mean, it's easy to say, oh, demolishing produces more carbon because you have to obviously transport it and then bring in new stuff and dig yeah. again and everything.
Yeah.
Is it that simple or is it a bit more complicated?
I think the simplest explanation for Europe having an advantage is that there are more and more nations in Europe who actually have a cap on embodied carbon in their national legislation.
Right.
So I think Europe is leading in actually putting these metrics into the building codes of the nation, which means, again, in those nations, the building sector, the entire value chain is starting to move towards that target. And that is a huge advantage if you're keen to decarbonize, because everyone has to do the same and you get scale faster and you kind of share the innovation and the investment required to get from old state to new state. And I think that's definitely an advantage. I think Europe has a lot of real estate already, but we're still building new. Asia and Australia, you mentioned, and the US, I think, share some of the same. They're also quite dense in the urban centers, but of course had different cultures and different standards for building. The energy system is set up differently, which of course plays a huge defining factor in terms of your carbon footprint. What is your provision of energy? Is it clean or is it not? And I think, again, those things are sometimes regional and not national. But again, that would be my second most defining factor in terms of carbon emissions. It is not always easy to refurb an existing asset, especially not if it's an old. Typically, you have very little information about the materials, whether they're even healthy to be in and so forth. But I think we're now building that into a newer building. So going forward, that will be a lot easier to refurbish what we're constructing today. So sometimes, not for carbon reasons, but maybe for health reasons, you have to do quite a radical refurb to make the building up to date in terms of health and safety. So it is very much a case by case, but I think in general, in Europe, we have stronger legislation, clearer legislation. That helps us, and we have a culture in certain areas for cleaner energy, which of course is a massive lever also.
Great. Well, it's been fantastic listening to your views, Elizabeth. Thank you for your time. We'll have to have you on again in a year or so and see how things have developed.
Yes, that would be interesting. Thank you so much for inviting. I love these discussions, and yes, I think we are. A lot will happen in this space, hopefully also in the short term. So we'll pick it up. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Elizabeth.
Thank you.